today I have with me the wonderful Vicki Robin, who is co-author of the book Your Money or Your Life. And I bought the book Your Money or Your Life when it originally came out in 1992. And much of it made profound sense then at the dawn of the high-tech Clinton-era boom. You know, things like notice what really matters, learn to say enough, simplify, choose. Today, as we descend into the deepest financial crisis in over 60 years, its message is no longer a lifestyle choice for many of us, and ideally, I think, for the entire American culture. It's a necessity. Your Money, Your Life shows readers how to gain control of their money and finally begin to make a life rather than just make a living. This new edition, which this is, contains updated resources, updated anecdotes, and tells you how to get out of debt and develop savings, reorder material priorities and live well for less, resolve inner conflicts between your values and your lifestyle, and save the planet while you save money, and a lot more. Vicki Robin is the co-author with Joe Dominguez of the national bestseller, Your Money or Your Life, Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence. She has worked to further that vision for years ever since, and has contributed to all of the new additions that have occurred since then, and basically has been a great voice for this whole message ever since. Vicki Robin, welcome.
It's great to be with you, Terry.
I like people to get a feel for the people behind the ideas, the books, all that sort of thing. What led you to that first collaboration with Joe Dominguez back in the early 90s?
I was somebody from early in my life. I had a basic sort of middle class upbringing, but really early on I realized that the less money you spent, the further it went and the more adventure you could have. So for me, frugality has always been equated with freedom, with possibility. I know for some people, frugality isn't, you know, it's like having tons of money is equated with freedom. But for me, that's just having tons of possessions. For me, I wanted to travel light and travel far. And I met Joe, and he's really a kindred spirit. But he had worked out this program for himself, for his own early retirement. He early in life had the aha. He grew up in Harlem, but he was a rated genius, and he was given opportunity to go to school with the sons and daughters of the wealthiest people in New York City, and looked around and he said, you know what, rich or poor people aren't very happy, so this whole thing about making a living, which he called making a dying, that cannot be the point of life. So he determined he was going to be, through the money-making part of his life, sort of like military service. Like, you do it because you have to, but then he was going to find a way so that he could liberate his life energy to do what else was out there, you know, and there really weren't a lot of models for life lived outside of the box of earning, spending, earning, spending, earning, spending, earning, spending, dying. You know?
Yeah.
So Joe figured this out for himself, very practical. You know, it wasn't like making a killing on Wall Street. It was just a very practical approach. And I met him soon after he had completed that process, and he explained it to me. And it made sense because it also, you know, met my idea of liberating my time for, you know, study, travel, service, relationship, spiritual evolution, being engaged in the issues of the day, all of the things that seemed so important to me that didn't seem to have anything to do with building a career. So we worked together for quite a while, and after about 10 years, of him being financially self-sufficient, people started asking him how he did it. He started teaching it. I helped him to put together the early seminars. And he was much more of a recluse than I was. I was much more social and communicative, and I got excited, more and more excited, about telling more and more people about this approach to money that really puts it in its place in life, puts your money in service of your values and your vision and your goals. You know, it's like when a financial planner asks you, what are your goals? And somebody says a new car. I think, no, life is about more than that. It's about more than that. Maybe a new car if your car is a beater, but it's about, you know, who you are in the world and what you want to do. So I became passionate, and the opportunity came up. An agent approached us to write a book, and I said, great, let's do it. And he said, okay, if you write it and you go out in the road and publicize it, fine. And so we worked together on the book. It's fundamentally Joe's idea, but my capacity to chunk it out in ways that make sense to ordinary folk.
So what I hear there is an interesting collaboration, and it also strikes me, Vicki, that it's kind of neat that you two were different, because if this system, if Joe's system only worked for people who were more or less recluses, who, you know, kind of had a certain, you know, that sounds like they're on the road to simplicity already, whereas you, being someone who's out there and engaged in the world, you know, it shows that, in fact, the system works for any type of person.
Exactly. And Joe was trained as an engineer, and he was a systems thinker, and he was one of the early people to develop a system of analysis of the flow of money through the stock market called technical analysis, which has actually become the dominant way to analyze the market. So he was that sort of person, whereas I'm much more social and outward oriented, and so for somebody like me, I was willing to do this is a step-by-step program. It's a 9-step program, and it's not a philosophy per se. There's a lot of philosophical underpinnings, but it's like, okay, here's the first thing you do. Here's the second thing you do. All the steps are very simple. They make a lot of sense. They are a mix and match of a variety of approaches to money, and they synergize together to really create this wake-up call about, oh, my God, I was dealing with money in a way that made no sense, but nobody gave me the tools before to see it this way. So I was willing to do the structural part of, like, you know, tracking, you know, every penny that came into and out of my life, you know, doing the data collection and analysis part, because I understood that was the fundamental basis of the transformational part, which I was interested in. So, yeah, somebody like me, who is more of an artistic temperament, and somebody like Joe is more of an engineering temperament, if both of us found value, yeah, it does span the waterfront.
Okay. Joe passed away years ago, yes?
Correct, 12 okay. years ago.
Okay. You, however, I didn't realize this before, you'd been engaged with the process, the approach, for years before the book.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I had lived it, and I had collaborated with Joe in a number of projects for, 10 years.
Okay, so that's 10. Then there's 92. Then we're at 2009. So you've been dealing with it. Tell me, we're not pegging your age here, but you've been dealing with this process and this approach in the book, Your Money, Your Life. How has it evolved for you over the years? And you can even tell me about this. Obviously, as I said, this book has been a perennial bestseller. So one of the things that you did that freed you to some extent is you created something which has been a constant source of income over that time. But, but basically, how your relationship to this system has evolved over all those years.
Great questions, Terry. It's really fun talking with you.
Thank you.
So the first thing, I want to do the second thing first, which is, Joe and I made a commitment, because this is really about, for us, it was a service project. It was not about making a big name for ourselves or becoming famous. It was really about offering to the world a process that naturally makes people frugal and protective of their life energy, as in, like, not wasting. And for us, it was an environmental issue. It was, you know, that we cannot afford to waste the Earth's resources in just sort of wanton consumption, because, A, it's a free country, it's my money, I can do whatever I want, and if I don't have the money, I have a credit card. You know, this is just an unsustainable of the highest order attitude. So we really wanted to address the environmental crisis. We wanted to address the sort of social degradation of everybody having, you know, like one, you know, you buy this people box called a house, you know, and you hide out in it, you know, everybody being so individualistic that who was attending to the commons? And it's also a spiritual crisis of the degradation of our sense of value, if you think value is all about money. So this was, you know, I was fairly much a missionary. You've known me for years. You've probably seen that quality.
Oh, yeah.
And I really wanted to change the world. And so we decided, and really up until just a few years ago when I left the foundation that Joe and I created together, all the money, all the income from our seminar, from the tape course, and from this book was given away.
Oh.
Yeah. So I really didn't start profiting from it at all personally until just a few years ago. And actually, the story is that I was diagnosed with cancer almost exactly 5 years ago. And I was going through the process of treatment, and I realized, you know what? I need more money than that. and the fact of the matter is I'm working really hard on this project, and I'm taking no money for it. And I could either continue that as a volunteer thing and go out and stress myself and go find some other source of income, or I could just, like, go, okay, fine. The time has come to actually take the money. So that's the history of Your Money, Your Life. And so, no, I have not made out like a bandit. As a matter of fact, Joe and I and our foundation gave away $1 million of proceeds over the course of about 10 years. So that's on that. And how have I evolved? I think the evolution at first for me, this program was simply about personal liberation. It was about extricating myself from the insanity of the money system and being able to direct my energy where I chose, where my best lights told me to put my energy, not like where I could have some sort of financial advantage. But it was in 1989 I attended the first North American conversation about what was a new term at that time. It was sustainable development. And it was at that conference I realized that overconsumption in North America is the biggest driver of environmental degradation. And I became passionate at that time about spreading this program because it was the best thing I knew to encourage people to lower their consumption, not just a little bit, you know, not just change a light bulb, but people on average, when they follow the steps in this program, on average, their expenses go down by about 20 to 25% in 6 months. And most people say they don't miss it. They don't even know what they used to spend the money on because it's an awareness-based approach where you're trying to maximize the pleasure and fulfillment for every dollar spent.
The nine steps, would it make sense to talk about the nine steps in just that way?
Sure, I can do that. What I'd like to talk about it is steps 2, 3, and 4.
Great.
For me, that's the heart of the program.
Great.
The first step is creating a balance sheet, and the later steps are about, you know, just sort of powering, you know, energizing your capacity to save money and your capacity to earn money, and finally to save enough money, you know, over the long haul that you could actually live on the income from your investments. And you don't have to go to work every day at a job in order to be able to pay the bills.
Okay, so we will emphasize then 2, 3, and 4. But let me say something that I just heard in what you said. When you point out that the end of the book is about living off your investments, that probably surprised some people because people hear a thing about, you know, you're going to simplify, you're going to spend less, you're going to, you know, live a more sustainable life. They probably figure you're never going to end up with investments. But that's not the case. In other words, the goal here is not to live in sackcloth and be deprived. The goal here is, as I said, it took your words early in the introduction, the goal is to make a living, to make a life rather than just make a living. I mean, the goal here is actually to feel happier, more energized, more free, more connected and all of that while spending less money because you're not the slave of your income or the slave of your credit card and so on. So, sure, let's talk about stages 2, 3, and 4. And one question I'll throw in there right now for you is you said that most people find that they reduce their spending by 25% in fairly short order. I think if I'm listening, I want to know, how does that happen?
How does that happen? Okay, so that's the steps 2, 3, and 4. It's a byproduct of doing these steps. And the step 2 is it asks the question, what is money? And, you know, actually, we don't know. Most people don't know, even very smart people, when they actually tell you, you know, admit it. They don't know what money really is. Well, it's the pieces of paper and metal. And, okay, it's a store of value, as the economists say. It's a means of exchange. But at another level, money is all of those roiling emotions you have, you know, this upset and self-denigration and self-aggrandizement and prestige and power and love and sex and everything. You know, it's like all of that feeling you know, and your feelings that you have about money, which is really about your capacity to have resources, it affects your daily transactions with the pieces of paper and metal and plastic, actually. And then there's the cultural constructs around money. There's what we everybody knows to be true, which is, you know, growth is good, more is better. It's the water in which we swim. There's spiritual ideas about money is flow and reciprocity. You know, all of those layers are true. Then there's the sort of hard facts about how those pieces of paper and metal get into our wallet and the banking system, which we're now all getting quite educated in.
Yes.
So there's all this stuff about what money is. And it can be very confusing and disempowering. Like, geez, I'm just a little person. I don't know any of that stuff. And so what we say money is money is the hours of your life that you invest in putting it in your wallet. In other words, it's your life energy.
Wait. So in other words, your definition of money is what you do to acquire money?
It's the hours you invest. I mean, you know, so let's say you spend... You know, you invest an hour of your life, you know, being, you know, I don't know, shoe salesman,
mm-hmm.
and you get $20.
Mm-hmm.
And so $20 equals an hour of your life.
Uh-huh.
So when you go and spend $20...
You're spending an hour of your
you're
life.
You're spending an hour of your life. Once you make that equation between something that seems unlimited because you can always make more because of the credit cards, and or you can always go into more debt... Something that seems unlimited and confusing, and you're equating it with something that's very limited because we don't have more, you know, best, you know, probably 80, 90 years. So we have a limited number of hours of our lives, and everything we value has to go in those hours. You know, your job as a shoe salesman, but also your relationship with your partner and you know, walking the dog and being in nature and going to church, and everything you care about has to fit in those 72 years. Or 85 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So once you make that equation, you start to realize that being frugal is not deprivation. No, it's self-preservation. Because the fewer of those hours of your life you can spend to produce the same experience of well-being, the better.
Okay.
And actually, so the step two is that recognition.
Well,
money is my
yep.
life energy. The trade is not as good as I think it is because out of those $20 comes car fare, daycare, taxes, etc. My real hourly wage may be $7, not $20. And so keeping track of those dollars as they run through my life becomes a very important, to me, exercise. So... Step two is simply tracking all the dollars that come into and out of your life.
So it's two things then. It's the redefinition, the real realization of what you're spending when you're spending a dollar. You're spending some part of your life.
Exactly.
Okay, and then it's keeping track. Once you get that shift, then keep track. I asked you before if there's a workbook. There's not exactly workbook, but there is a free supplement to this book, yes?
No, and it's actually not free, unfortunately.
Oh.
We're hoping it can be free eventually.
Oh.
Currently, it's a $5 download, and it is available from yourmoneyyourlife.org, which is the site that sells the products associated with the book. The official website for the book is yourmoneyyourlife.info. That's where I blog, and, you know, it's a very rich environment of, you know, resources that are free. But at YourMoneyYourLife.org, you can download for $5 a study guide that helps you either go through the material yourself, just some prompts, or you can use it for a group. And there's great study guide groups that meet. And I, you know, I think this is completely, it's between you and your wallet. You know, it's not nobody else needs to know about this transformation. But when you do it with a group, I think it keeps your toes to the fire, keeps you accountable, and it makes it more fun and interesting.
Well, sure. I mean, if things like Weight Watchers, Alcoholics Anonymous and all obviously work because we work best when we are part of something bigger than ourselves and have some people to reflect to us, then this makes very good sense to me that to approach this as a group would make good sense. So number one, you said the three key steps are 2, 3, and 4. Number two is realize that money is not just paper. It's not just a credit card. It is your life. It is each, figure out what you do for each, how many hours it takes to earn each dollar, or how many dollars you're trading for every hour of your life, and begin to just think every time you pull out that card or pull out that wallet differently about what you're spending, and then keep track of what you're spending. What are the other two critical steps?
Okay, so once you have tracked for a month all the dollars flying into and out of your wallet, the next thing to do is develop categories of spending that fit your life. And this is really trying to get you out of the budget book mentality, which is more like, okay, well, we all know that we should spend no more than 30% of our income on housing, and so there's a housing category. Well, yeah, okay, but, you know, just take a look at your life in terms of housing. Is it your house? Is it rent? Is it motels? Is it couch surfing? I mean, what's your housing situation? Or clothing? You know, these budget book categories for clothing. Oh, I shouldn't spend more than $200 a month because that's what I can afford. But you take a look. Okay, what do I do about clothing? Well, there's my job costuming. That's one type of clothing. Then there's my running suit and my jogging suit and my gym clothes and my party clothes and my my bed clothes and my everything clothes. And so you just start to think about, okay, what do I want to really track here? What do I want to become aware of? Because this is a behavior modification sort of process. What do I become aware of in terms of my behavior? So you might have my work clothes and my at-home clothes. Or you might have a whole separate category for shoes, because shoes is your fetish. And you might even have to bake that down into, like, you know, play shoes and work shoes, whatever you need. So you develop these categories, and it becomes a very interesting process of saying, well, what do I really spend my money on?
So let me cut in on this one.
Yeah.
So let me try to get the sense of this. Rather than kind of thinking, oh, I've got a big category, right, a big mm-hmm. auto, or a big category travel, or a big category,
right,
as you say, clothing, what you're saying, I think, is if you break it down, if you really look at it, you'll see things that you don't see
exactly
before that. And
exactly,
once you see them, then it's up to you what you do about them.
Yes, so this is, we're sort of halfway through this process. It's a process of observation and inquiry rather than a process of budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not having a predetermined cookie-cutter budget book thing, but just having you observe your life and what do you need to observe in your life. So you tally up your expenses in every one of your subcategories, and then you translate each one of them into hours of my life. So let's say you spend $21 on, blouses. I don't know what, some category. And so because before you've calculated my real hourly wage, I spend... I get a $7 for every hour of my life. That would be 3 hours of my life for that blouse. So that's all you do. The second step is really just you get this data in front of you in hours of your life, because the next step, the fourth step, which is this little triumvirate of three, the fourth step is to ask yourself two questions fundamentally. The first question is a happiness question. Is like, am I glad I spent 3 hours of my life for this blouse? Well, you know, if that blouse is, you know, you're going to wear it forever, it's just adorable, you've always wanted it, blah, blah, blah. You know, that could be a three really happy hours of your life making the money for that blouse. But if it's just, you know, every week I get a blouse because, you know, I want to reward myself for a hard work week,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, half of them still have their tags on them.
Right,
in my closet,
right.
Then it gives you this moment of like, no, actually, that doesn't make me happy. So that's the first question you ask of that 3 hours for your blouse. And the second question you ask is that expense of my life energy, am I investing myself, taking me towards what I think is most important?
Oh.
And so it's your values. Is it supporting my values, my goals, my dreams in life? Because a lot of us have big dreams in life, and you get to midlife and you say, what happened?
Right.
I didn't get there. But so this is a way for you to actually day by day, week by week, align the hours you spend with the goals that you have. So if you say, well, okay, that blouse is the blouse I, you know, I'm going to wear for every interview in the future, and I'm going to work my income up, you know, and that blouse is going to be that, my ticket.
That blouse is an asset. It's part of my investment toward those goals because it's a piece of,
Yeah, you're hired. You can describe this. So, yeah, exactly. So that's, you ask those two questions of every expenditure of life energy, of your real hourly wage, and that is the process by which people transform their relationship with money. Because after 6 months of that activity, there are expenses that are going to fall away. You know, like every day you buy yourself a muffin, or you know, this one woman realized that her real hourly wage was a quarter, and every time she went down to the Coke machine, it was 2 hours of her life. So it just broke the Coke machine habit, and she brought, you know, a thermos from home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you start to see wasteful spending not as somebody else's, you know, finger-wagging judgment of your
spending.
But you say, hey, I'm just not going to do that anymore. It doesn't work for me. And people find 20 to 25% of their expenses is that kind of unconscious daily or weekly fluff. And it can go all the way up. I mean, fluff could be a new car. Fluff could be like, wait a second, I have a car. What am I doing about this new car? Or wait a second, I think I want an SUV because it's red and because it's big and I like the tires. But, you know, is it really worth three years of my life?
Right. No, this is very interesting. And what I'm also thinking is, I mean, you mentioned that person that calculated that her actual hourly wage was 25 cents. One thing, and the person, when you mentioned, you know, someone rewarding themselves with a blouse each week or something, it strikes me that the people who are really struggling, the people who are making the least, it seems to me there might be a tendency then to say, God, my life is so damn hard. I'm getting this cappuccino. I'm going to that rock concert. I'm doing this thing. And what you're saying is that is maybe gratifying at that moment. But when you begin to put it into one, what am I really paying for this with?
Exactly.
And then where am I going? If at the end of a year, will I still be in the same position, rewarding myself now and then to make my life bearable, rather than shifting to some other way of rewarding yourself so that your life becomes much more than bearable?
Precisely. That's such a great way to say it. And so it's not a question. We're not suggesting that people eliminate anything that makes their life wonderful. We're suggesting that you eliminate the expenses on things that don't really make your life. There's a difference between a thrill, which is like that little moment when you get the item, and fulfillment, which is the many times you use that item over time, every time it brings you happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to distinguish those things is important. We're not saying, you know, people who are just scraping by at the very bottom, this will be helpful in helping you to save money. There's many great suggestions. But this is for people who just have a little bit of margin, who need to be making better choices. And the result of doing this over time is you get out of debt because you're saving money. Because where does that 20% off the top go? Well, it goes towards paying off your debt.
When people start doing this, at first this sounds like a little like the nagging angel on your shoulder, you know, going, wait a minute, is that worth an hour? You know, is that worth 2 hours? When people get into the habit of asking these questions when they're spending money and thus changing the way they spend, you've done it yourself, you've spoken to probably thousands of people who've done it. How does it feel?
How does it feel? It feels empowered. Most people feel empowered, on top of things. It's like, you know, going from being a couch potato who reads magazines on fitness and getting out and actually running. Or, you know, walking every day. Once you walk every day, how do you feel? You feel energized. You feel healthy. Your muscles are toned. You're going out with friends. You're breathing fresh air. You're looking at nature. You're meeting your neighbors. It's like it just becomes a wonderful part of your life, and you feel trim. You feel like I am the master of my life, not some victim of my life. And so that's how people feel.
So in other words, in that kind of thing, that's like a big feeling. That's like a big sense of who you are and who you are in relationship to your life. So the first few times it might be like, oh God, you know, right? But you're saying that once this becomes your approach, there'll be a, it kind of settles in at a deeper level.
Exactly. Yeah. And what people find when they do this tracking and the step after the evaluation is we suggest that people make a chart of income and expenses so that you can see over time the expense line hopefully going down and the income line staying steady or going up. So you can see your progress. And so people look at that. You know, the normal thing is I'm bringing in $2,000 a month and I'm spending $2,500.
It's right. You know, and I'll you know, work my credit card this way and I'll do this and that. And someday something magical is going to change this.
Exactly. So it's just this quiet confrontation with your own relationship with money and stuff. So you say, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm spending too much money. And so the next month, you know, your income stays at $2,000 and your expenses have gone down to $1,500 and you feel smug and you feel smart and you feel, and then of course you rebel. You say, well, no, this is too tight. And then you go back up. So there's like for the first period of time, you're really actually, as you say, you're sort of like dealing with your angels and devils.
Yeah.
You're dealing with your relationship with money. You're watching it over time, and then it smooths out. There's a, you know, it's like, well, we're not all kids or teenagers the rest of our lives.
Right.
There's a certain maturation. There's certain, like, okay, well, this is what I normally spend money on, and I know what brings me value, and if I go to movies every night, you know what? Yeah, like, each individual movie is worth less to me, but if I go to movies once a week, actually, that movie is perfect. So it's sort of like finding that Goldilocks place of enoughness, not too hot, not too cold, not too much, not too little. And that's what we're really helping people to do is, like, what is enough for you? That's the first question is, what is money? That's the unanswerable question that we try to give you a concrete answer for. The second one is, how much is enough?
Mm-hmm.
If I had $1 trillion, if I had a gazillion dollars, then I'd be like, you know, people say there's this thing about what's your number, like what's the number that you're aiming for that would be wealthy to you, would be enough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, $1 million, no, $2 million. Well, you know, most people who arrive at their number, they're so habituated to being a player who's making money that they don't stop.
Right. Well, the other thing that I was thinking as you were saying that is that I've heard a number of times that basically everyone thinks that the income they want is 20% more than the one they have. I mean, I've read research of that. Well, what you're saying is if, in fact, by doing this, you end up spending 20% less, that's a pretty good deal. In other words,
it's a very good deal. You don't get that deal very often.
Exactly. I want to ask two last questions. One is, the book is Your Money or Your Life, and you said there were two websites.
Yes. So there's yourmoneyyourlife.info. That's the website for the new edition of the book. And the new edition of the book has updated stats and stories, and it has new suggestions or revised suggestions for saving money that reflect the 21st century rather than the 1980s when we developed the program. And it also has an expanded understanding of how to invest your nest egg.
Okay, so that's yourmoneyoryourlife.info.
And I'm blogging there, and we have more and more resources there and conversations going on. You can email us. It's an interactive place if you want to interact with myself.
And the other one, the yourmoneyoryourlife.org?
Yeah, that's an online store that sells products associated with Your Money Your Life. Sells the book, the tape course that Joe developed, and the study guides, and they also have an online study process where you can join a group. There's 25 people per group. They can be people from anywhere in the world.
Oh, great!
And you do
online. You can organize that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you don't. It doesn't have to be with you and your friends, but you can do it online.
Yeah.
And
you can
do it
online. And so So there's a variety. You know, this has been around long enough that there's a variety of places on the web you can go to get good information.
Okay. I'm going to let you go, Vicki.
Great.
Okay. Thank you very much, Vicki Robin.
Bye.
Okay.